Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Dan, our next guest is Peter Scott. He's here to talk about the future, and more especially artificial intelligence. Will it save mankind or destroy it? Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, nice to be on the show.
Okay. Well, Peter, the name of your book?
Is Crisis of Control, How Artificial Superintelligences May Destroy or Save the Human Race.
Your website?
It's humancusp.com. That's humancusp.com.
And a little bit about your background?
Yes, I got a degree in computer science from Cambridge, England, and moved to the U.S. to work for NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. And continued doing that independently as I moved to Canada and then became an author as well as a coach. I branched out into addressing this question of the risk of technology and the promise of it because I've got two young daughters and it's too important for me to let go.
Well, Peter, in the 1960s, I read a science fiction story in which the world they built a supercomputer, and the world scientists fed all of the man's knowledge into it to ask it one question, and the question was, "Is there a God?" and the computer replied, "There is now."
And with a big flash of light, yes.
Okay. If I heard you correctly, you're saying that artificial intelligence can be the savior of mankind or possibly the destroyer. So with that as a thought, please discuss your theory, your book, et cetera.
Yes. Well, and I'm glad you brought up science fiction because this is something that up until a decade ago, I would have said was safely beyond my lifetime, and therefore science fiction was the appropriate context to discuss it in. But now I believe this is not only going to be happening in my daughter's lifetime, but my own as well. And that's due to the progress of technology, which is accelerating exponentially. And that creates two risks. One of those is the possibility that people will be able to leverage artificial intelligence to create weapons of mass destruction. Actually, that they will be able to create weapons of mass destruction without even any help from artificial intelligence, that they could do bioengineering through tools like CRISPR to create viruses that could wreak havoc on much larger scales than we were previously used to. But the other is that artificial intelligence as a computing technology could escape from control, and I don't mean so much in the sense of robots running amok, but in the sense that we will create something that is designed to be make creative decisions on its own because that's an asset, and that may cause unintended consequences.
Scientists have told me that there are already programs where they're actually creating their own programs within their artificial intelligence world, and they have no control over it, and it's worried them. So you're in effect
right.
saying, but what do we do to prevent this or at least control it.
And what I've observed in computers for as long as I've been in that field is that people create software that reflects their own values. And it's harder to see in the more primitive software, but you can look at how it responds to errors and unanticipated conditions, and you can see the thinking of the people behind it in the decisions that it makes or the bugs that are in it in those cases. But as we create more and more complex software doing more and more abstract tasks, like talking to people and holding conversations with them, it'll become more apparent that that software reflects the ethics of the people that put it together. And so to me, the way out of this is for us to create artificial intelligence in a transparent, open way so that it can be given and it can inherit the ethics of people who are watching all over the world to see that this is done in a way that's above board and ethical.
That's very interesting. I was given a briefing a couple of weeks ago on the virus that was introduced into the Iranian atomic energy effort. And the interesting thing about it was the fact that most of the malicious code was developed not by the Americans or the Israelis, but by the Russians, and that it was simply appropriated by the Americans to use in the attack. If you postulate that the Americans and the Israelis are on the good side and the Russians are not, it makes sense. But if not, it's an interesting comment.
That was the Stuxnet virus, and the interesting thing about that was it was only supposed to affect the Iranian uranium-separating centrifuges, which it did, but it had a bug in it that caused it to escape into the world's computers at large, and that's how the rest of us know about it.
Dad, I'm going to let you take over.
Good, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be on.
Let me go a little bit of a different direction. I've read a lot, and I've written some, not a lot, on artificial intelligence. As you're somewhat alluding to, there are some in the scientific community who are concerned that, left unchecked, that some levels of artificial intelligence can regenerate to a new generation on their own without the, any influence or control over man. Mm-hmm. And that their greatest concern is that this hybrid intelligence could take over many other computer systems of a lesser quality and have drastic, lasting, and huge implications for us.
Mm-hmm.
But the most recent article that I saw on this was the concern about, I don't want to say hackers is the wrong word.
Mm-hmm.
What the article was saying is that we have a recognized scientific community, people like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But there are young men and women who have great computer skills that operate in the dark web or other places that they're not part of the mainstream. They're not even close to the mainstream.
Right.
And so that these people could be creating artificial intelligence that can grow and expand on their own exponentially, and yet the scientific community, people like yourself, will ultimately have no control over that. And that is the risk with everybody having so much computing power that the opportunity to do really bad things abounds.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is one of the problems with the researchers proposing limits on AI development around the world, that they would only apply to people who we have less to fear from anyway. And the problem with software is that you can't monitor and verify it the way that you could nuclear weapon development or even bioweapon development. But with software, all you need is a network connection and a laptop. So yes, it could be abused in those respects. There are potentials for accidental release. And let's not forget that there are a lot of changes that are far less speculative and guaranteed to come in the near term, with automation effects and the changes to our socioeconomic structure as artificial intelligence becomes able to replace a lot of jobs that are currently occupied by people who are doing knowledge work of some kind.
So is there a way that dark web, those independent developers, can be controlled?
Well, not my expertise. You're talking about cyber warfare here, and I think you want a guest from the NSA to answer that question, except they probably wouldn't be able to tell you.
Right.
That would be top of their list of how to stop things like that, one would hope. But how they're going to do it is something I would probably get in trouble for claiming I knew about.
So, but let's take it one step further. What responsibility do the computer manufacturers have, if any?
Well, we're talking here about people manufacturing artificial intelligences, so we have to look at who the leaders in that field are, and that's Google and Facebook and a number of other entities that are working on what we call artificial general intelligence, and they have the most potential for creating something that might have that level of abuse. And I think that they're certainly aware that that possibility exists, but they believe quite rightly that we're not in a situation right now where that could happen. And what I and the other people alarming or raising alarms in this space, like Elon Musk and Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking, are saying is that when we get to the point where that does become a threat, we will have wished that we started thinking about this 10 years earlier.
But does the issue that you're raising, is it a privacy issue? Is it an issue of freedom of speech? And how does it vary from different parts of the world? I mean, the if we look at the communist countries, they're much more restrictive than we are in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you police it, is what I'm saying.
Yes, that's a very good question, and I don't advocate policing, so I don't have an answer to that. I think that would ultimately fail. Among those communist countries, Russia is making a huge investment in AI. Vladimir Putin said that the country that leads in AI will rule the world. Might have been giving part of his game plan away there. China is making a colossal investment in artificial intelligence. And if they're doing that, then that tells you a lot about the potential for this in changing geopolitical rivalries. Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wanted to throw a twist in on this, but go ahead and finish your thought.
Well, policing this is something that I think is ultimately just going to get away from it, because in the end, once something escapes, you cannot stop it without shutting down every device that's connected to the network because of the potential for it just living anywhere. And then that would throw us back to the Victorian era. So the policing, I think, is not where we should focus. What we should focus on is how do we imbue artificial intelligence with the ethics that we want it to reflect, so that when and if something escapes into the wild, that there is already a strong ethical artificial intelligence that could do something about it.
So let's move to a more practical side of the discussion, if I could.
Yes.
There are. I'm going to give you an example of the area that I want to explore. There's a company that manufactures most of Apple's products in China called Foxconn.
Right.
And about 2 years ago, they laid off 15,000 people out of their plant and replaced them with robotics.
Mm-hmm.
And my question to you, as we refine artificial intelligence, are we going to see companies replace more and more employees with this new generation of artificial intelligence robots?
Absolutely. They won't have any choice. It's interesting to see that this happened in China, where labor costs are already so low. So if they can get more profit in doing that in that market, then what happens in the rest of the world? A lot of this also doesn't require robotics in the sense of having something that can move things around. That a lot of highly paid jobs are knowledge work, which means someone's turning one kind of information into another. They're sitting in front of a computer to do that all day. Maybe they're analyzing budgets, or maybe they're doing accounting. Well, the right kind of artificial intelligence doesn't need robot arms to do that. It just needs to get the data and have somewhere to send its output. So unquestionably, we're going to see far more of this. And the accepted wisdom is that since every time in the past there's been a technological advance that automated one set of jobs, then and it created a newer and better set of jobs, then that will happen this time too. The question I have for those people who say that is, when machines can think better than us, what are we going to do that they can't?
Good point. So let me ask you another, staying in the same area, and this is probably a little bit out of your bailiwick, but maybe not. We've been talking about artificial intelligence, and we've just finished talking about robotics. But I want to go to another issue in the same venue. We have going on in our country, more so than anywhere else in the world, we have had this period of the last 3 to 6 months of tremendous upheaval in the reporting of sexual misconduct, harassment, whatever you want to call it, in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
In every possible combination of businesses. And at the same time, there's a concept that, as a scientist, I'm sure you understand, for every reaction there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And what seems to be happening on the reaction to this is the growth in sex robots. People buying these male and female robots who look very much lifelike because they don't want the interaction and the anguish and everything else of trying to deal with another human being. And in fact, I saw a recent study where, doesn't speak well for us, Professor, but about 40% of American women would prefer a robot to a man. But are we headed in the direction of that these robots, these human robots, are going to be the solution to your question, what happens when the robots can think better than we can?
Well, I don't deliberately research sex robots. That said, I have a lot of news feeds on artificial intelligence, and this crops up repeatedly. In those and probably at things like various electronic shows, so it's interesting to, I think, speculate about where it might go, and there's no shortage of stories in science fiction about that possibility. I do not think this is something that is going to become big for quite a while. In other words, I think that there is the other existential risks that I'm concerned about are going to come before those, because the difficulty of constructing something that, I mean, the human body has nerve endings like hundreds to every square inch, and able to respond in ways that we're nowhere close to replicating, I think, adequately. So as much as this produces some rather good news sound bites, I don't think this is going to become an issue on the same timeline as things like widespread unemployment, which is something that calls for a lot of people and discussion to discuss the question of income redistribution, and for instance.
So let me go just a little bit different direction. If I if I listen to what you've been saying for the last 10-15 minutes, and about the evolution of this process of where we're going, is there in your mind a tipping point, an area where you say, well, if we get to this point, I become very scared? Do you know where that is?
Yes. Well, there is one tipping point, and I can't say how far out it is. No one can. But there is, when we get to the point where computers can program themselves, can ascertain requirements and create programs that will solve those, so we no longer need programmers to do that, then the world changes within hours. That is a tipping point for sure. That right now the process of creating software it requires lots of phases, many people doing it quite imperfectly in ways that are often frustrating and lengthy. When a computer learns how to do that, it will happen a million times faster. So then the rate of evolution of software at that point will be incomprehensible.
Dan, I want to jump in here. You've raised so many issues, but I wanted to go back to one earlier. I don't know if you saw the report, but the U.S. military is saying that the Russians are now looking for a long-range torpedo that will go underwater for thousands of miles, and they figure it would have to be developed by artificial intelligence. And I heard our guest say very rightly that you don't need an AI to develop weapons, but you do need it for some of the newer weapons. But it seemed to me in talking, if you remember the movie, not Failsafe, but the other one dealing with atomic destruction, they started arguing about building caves to save mankind. What do you think will be the eventual end to all of this posturing?
There are two possibilities here. AI can create incredible utopia. Everything that you've heard about from people that are painting the picture of how good the future can be when the technology arrives to solve these problems like cancer, aging, death, even, is all correct, and that will happen provided we don't have an existential crisis in the meantime with that technology destroying us in the process. And this is why people like even Elon Musk recently said he thought there was only a 10% chance that we would make it through that phase. So and you raised a lot of issues there as well. Artificial intelligence is in weaponry right now, and it's certainly to degrees that we're not aware of, because classified technology is usually a decade or more ahead of where we are aware of it if we don't have a clearance. I've heard that torpedoes now have enough intelligence in that instead of a submarine firing it at something else that it can see, they're just launched and then they just loiter around waiting for something that they decide to be a threat and then take it out, which is like an underwater version of a drone that's been made autonomous, which is something else that we're doing, and is making drones autonomous so that they could decide what targets to take out. They had said that they would always make sure there was a human in the loop, but that decision actually had a sunset clause some years ago, and I don't think it was renewed. So there has been a effort to figure out how to give ethics to armed drones. And that's hard to do because, and here's, I think, one of the most really interesting things for everyone, because we've been talking about a lot of things that are someone else's problem, some scientist or software developer to solve, but we're just, you know, collateral damage, innocent bystanders. But when it comes to ethics, no one has a really good idea of what ethics are. And how would we solve that problem if we needed to program ethics into a computer? Well, we would tell that computer to learn from all of us, the same way that self-driving cars learn from all of the cars that are fitted with sensors to report on how people are driving, the same way that we learned how to tell computers how to recognize faces from learning from just watching how we did it and training on that. And so when we want to learn about ethics, since we can't really program that, we don't know how to do that, we'll tell the computers, look at people and learn from that. That's your ethical blueprint. And so it's really up to all of us, I think, to start being aware that we could be starting to be watched by computers. Maybe it's your Siri or Alexa that want to learn about ethics, and they'll do that from what they can see about us.
I just hope they don't learn from some of my family members. Boy, would they Anyway, Peter, the name of your book again?
Crisis of Control: How Artificial Superintelligences May Destroy or Save the Human Race.
Dan, you want the last question?
Well, I would like to. It's more of a comment than anything else. Peter, I'm concerned about studying the environment to determine ethics. We have a lot of people in the public sector, as we just saw last Friday in the release of the memo from the House Intelligence Committee about what, in my opinion, is a lack of ethics and leadership in government. So maybe the examples are not the best to look around. And I would think that intelligence would want to look at, it might want to look at the leadership first before it goes down to the rank and file. And in a lot of cases, the leadership is not very good.
Well, I would completely agree. I would say I really hope that people trying to program computers with ethics don't give it C-SPAN to learn from.
Right. Agreed. Thank you for being with us today. It was an enjoyable conversation.
Thank you very much. Happy to be on anytime you want.
Thank you, Peter. And a link to your website will be on our recalculating.biz tonight. Your website again for people?
humancusp.com, humancusp.com.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, fail-proof strategies for small business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, "If you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there," is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Dan, Nigel Parker is the founder of Rashends. It was founded to deal with the age-old clinical struggle to treat patients with diaper dermatitis and bed sores, and was described to the inventor by an NICU nurse in the family. Nigel, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Don. Glad to be here.
Well, we first want to hear a little bit about your background. Then we want to hear exactly what is Rashends, and then we'll go from there.
Absolutely. Very quickly, I'm proud to say I'm a Guyanese American who has spent the last 33 years as a aerospace systems engineer and rocket scientist is the term most folks like to call us, working on many different technological developments for the aerospace industry and other industries. And that has led me to what has since become Rashends and a whole new way of looking at wound care.
Okay, what is Rashends? What's the company do, and how does it work?
Rashends is a technology that was created to allow therapeutic oxygen or air to be continuously delivered to a patient's skin, whether that patient is wearing a diaper or wearing a wound bandage. It is a revolutionary technology for the continuous aeration of wounds. And it is a next generation technology over the normal current protocols of using drug therapies. It is a safe, natural way to deliver oxygen to a wound without needing a drug solution. It also has a wonderful additional benefit that all incontinent patients who may develop a variety of wounds like bed sores, like rashes, can be treated at home using a standard over-the-counter air nebulizer that would continually keep them dry, let's say overnight, and therefore prevent the onset of some very serious medical problems.
Well, I'm going to admit I'm fascinated by what you're talking about, but is it an apparatus? Is it a salve? What is it exactly, Nigel? Clear picture.
Very well. It is a device that fits into an incontinent garment and provides an inlet for air to be piped into that patient's skin while they're wearing the incontinent garment. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can envision a person with this very thin, flexible device that is a gas distribution device. It takes air from any source. It takes oxygen from any source and continuously delivers it to all the skin that's covered by that incontinent garment or that wound bandage.
Okay, so it's a covering of some sort, either a modified diaper or a modified bandage. Am I hearing you correctly?
I think you're almost there. Let me just be clear. Imagine you're wearing a diaper garment. It has a absorbent padding in it. Imagine a device that goes around that padding. It's very thin. It sticks to the padding, and then connects to any air source, any respiratory air source. And then that source keeps blowing that air or that oxygen onto that patient's skin. That's what's unique about it. It is not a diaper at all.
No, I understand that. But it's a diaper-like garment. We've known for years that if you can put more oxygen on a wound, it always heals faster. What is your website, and how do you spell it so people can know about that and go to it now?
Thank you. The website is rashends.com, spelled RASHENDZ.com. It is a fascinating technology that implements an age-old solution. We all know if we take a Band-Aid off of a wound, the wound heals faster. Parents know that. Clinicians know that. There has never been a technology that allows that sort of oxygen therapy to be done continuously on any part of any patient's body in any care setting, whether it's at home or in a hospital, whether it's air or oxygen or any other therapeutic gas that a clinical protocol would require. This is the only patented device in the world that lets you treat any wound on any part of any patient's body.
Wow.
It's really revolutionary like that.
Okay. Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. Nigel, having been 3 weeks ago diagnosed as a type 2 diabetic myself, and Don has been a diabetic for a number of years, when I went to the classes at the hospital, one of the things they talk about what happens with diabetes is that our skin begins to thin. And as a result, we are very susceptible to sores, punctures, wounds that take an enormous amount of time to heal, much more so than somebody who had healthy skin. So I'm fascinated from a clinical standpoint, but from a personal standpoint, hopefully I'll never have to use your product. But it would seem to me that this would be helpful for my mother-in-law had incredibly thin skin, and when she would bump and get a bruise and then hemorrhage, it took her a long, long time. And she had many open sores all over her body where she would stumble or fall or trip or whatever. But my question is, am I right saying that this system that you have, that the patient has to be in bed or in a stationary position, that is not portable?
No, they do not have to be in bed at all. In fact, there are mobile devices that can deliver air or oxygen to a patient who is mobile. In fact, you touched, Dan, on a very, very critical issue that's affecting healthcare today. Diabetic-based ulcers, diabetic foot ulcers. I would like to report to you that the most complex clinical study ever done on healing of diabetic foot ulcers was published in February of this year out of the University of Texas Health System. And they have demonstrated the amazing benefits of topical oxygen therapy, which they refer to as the continuous diffusion of oxygen therapy. The results on diabetic foot ulcer patients who were the target cohort of the research was astonishing. And the worse the wound was, the more the patient needed oxygen therapy, and the benefits were just transformative. I would certainly encourage your audience to go find that paper on continuous diffusion of oxygen. It is a remarkable demonstration of what using rash ends with a mobile oxygen source can do for such patients. Our device is the one that allows any patient to connect to anybody's mobile oxygen source and treat their wound, whether they're mobile or whether they're bedridden.
So let me ask you a very specific question. Suppose that I am a person who needs a portable oxygen or uses a portable oxygen supply in order to, because I've got CPOD, COPD, or whatever. Is an oxygen supply like that what could be used to run your product?
Absolutely. In fact, every mobile oxygen source that plugs into a respiratory mask, the simple tube that plugs into that respiratory mask for COPD, exactly that's the fitting that is on the rash ends device. And so every mobile oxygen concentrator, every mobile oxygen source, every mobile air source used for respiratory care plugs directly into our device without any additional work being necessary.
Okay, so now I've got to be more specific with you, okay? And I'm going to explain to you, because Don and I, with both now being diabetics, we have kind of made diabetes an objective for us to try and provide information and solutions. So we would want to talk to you after this interview to see how we think yours might fit with us, but only if it can answer this question. Does it require a prescription to buy your product?
No. You can go to rashends.com right now, and you can purchase an FDA-cleared general wellness device we call ResAir, and you can purchase it today, and it would be shipped to you in less than a week.
And my word, not yours, the bladder or the chamber, that doesn't require a prescription either.
Nothing about the ResAir product requires a prescription in order to be used with normal available respiratory air.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to ask you, did I hear you say it was FDA approved?
It's cleared by FDA for general wellness usage. It does not require a formal FDA letter of approval. We are compliant with the FDA's requirements for a general wellness product, and therefore it is absolutely cleared by the FDA for immediate use and immediate purchase.
So is it available? Can I go to your website and buy it now?
Right now.
And before we went on the air, you told me that you're a billion-dollar business.
Yes.
Do you have this is a question that Don and I ask all the time of $1 billion is a lot of money, but in many respects it's not a lot of money, and I'm not demeaning your success. Do you have any problem with scalability?
Oh, no. Think about it this way. This is the same device that is needed on millions of patients every day. It is a disposable device. Pictures of it are on our website. Please, I encourage everyone to go look at it, and we're continuing to add more content to our website. This can be used for babies. This can be used for adults in different sizes immediately. Now, in terms of a billion-dollar company, it's very easy. There are 1.7 million nursing home beds in the United States. 40% or more of them are incontinent. That is 700,000 to 800,000 people every day in the United States for 365 days a year, just in nursing homes.
Yeah,
there are 5,000 hospitals.
Right. But we also have, according to the Diabetes Association, get over 30 million people who have diabetes, and we're adding 1.3 million every year.
Yes.
So I hate to say it, but it's a booming business. But
Dan, can I jump in and ask another question?
Sure.
Is it Medicaid or health insurance the cost of? Reimbursable yet?
The answer is emphatically yes, and we have not progressed to the place where Medicare has assigned a code for it, but institutions who treat patients with this device can bill whomever their insurance payer is for the successful treatment of a wound. We anticipate that there's a 300 to 500% ROI to hospitals and nursing homes who use this therapy over the current standard of care. That, my friend, makes it very reimbursable.
So if I follow up with Don's question, do you anticipate that you will get a Medicare SKU eventually?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, we have a customer who is placing an order this week, and they plan to bill Medicare after successful treatment of those patients. And so we've been working with the FDA, we've been working with Medicare, and we've been working with all of the major payers in the United States to develop and approve rations for use across their entire health systems. We're not doing this as individual sales folks. We're doing this across the entire health system. We have an agreement with the United Kingdom to do the same thing.
Dan, can I jump in here? And you raised so many issues that we don't know where to start. Besides giving Nigel a great commercial, but Nigel, your website again for people.
I'm sorry, Don. Can you repeat that?
Your website. What is your website?
Thank you. Rashends.com. RashEnds.com.
Okay, now I'd like to ask another question. What made you get into this?
A wonderful neonatal intensive care nurse who happens to be a cousin of mine called 8 years ago, frustrated after decades of dealing with diaper rashes in her babies. She started doing all sorts of things that we've since learned that many nurses around the country do. They know this works. Many of them do various things, ripping the padding out of diapers, sticking respiratory hoses into the leg of a diaper, all sorts of things that's not scalable and operational and functional. And she called me 8 years ago and said, there's got to be a way to do this. That night, we spent 3 hours on the phone. I invented the first aspect of the technology that night. And 8 years later, we've built this into a complete global business that's an online e-commerce business that we've launched here in the last month.
But it took you 8 years. What were the things what took you so long? I'm saying that jokingly.
Well, imagine the scale of the problem, gentlemen. Imagine the scale of the problem. How do you design one device that can heal every patient of all sizes using a therapy that nobody uses? That is a massive problem to solve. And it took me, again, a very experienced rocket scientist who has managed $100 million businesses and things of that nature. It took me years to develop the technology, the innovative business strategy around this, to understand how we will absolutely become a global force, to understand how to define the niche in wound care that we are today, to gain the people to support us. And now we have, for example, we're working with the VA doing multi-year clinical studies on every possible disease that this therapy can be used for. That took a long time.
Dan
could tell you about working with the VA.
Yeah, I have a foundation that works with 85 facilities across the country dealing with traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, sleep deprivation, and suicide. But that's for another story. So let me get back to the bottom line again. These are, and I apologize for using the word bladder, but that seems the only thing that comes into my brain, and until you can convince me there's a different word to use. But these come in different sizes. Obviously, you wouldn't put the same thing on an infant that you would put on a senior adult. Is that correct?
Correct. The devices are sized to fit the patient's incontinent garment, the patient's diaper.
But let me okay. So before I ask you the price, let me go one step further. In the case of my mother-in-law, where she had skin wounds, we're not going to put this in a diaper. Is it something that she could have put on her arm over this wound that would have promoted the healing much faster?
I am restricted by the FDA from speaking specifically about wound care, gentlemen, because we are a general wellness device. But I can tell you that clinical studies have been done at hospitals and nursing homes with Lash-Ins for a variety of wounds, and every one of those wounds were healed in 80, 90% faster time frames. If I may add a couple of pieces of data, there are patients who had wounds that had persisted for as long as 2, 3, and 4 months. When
yes.
treated with Lash-Ins overnight in the nursing homes, those wounds were healed in 3, 4, and 5 days.
Wow. Amazing.
And we have data that is legitimate, defendable data.
Okay. Now, you spoke a few moments ago about a study that was done in Texas.
Yes.
And I wonder if...
Please go ahead.
I wondered if, off the air, if you could... help us find that link so that when we broadcast this show and we put your profile up on our website, we can get that link for people so that they can go look at the study.
Absolutely. In fact, I can tell you right now that that link is on our website today.
Oh, okay. So we'll get it off of your website. Okay, so back to this other issue, and that is, what does it cost?
It is currently for sale at $50 each, believe it or not. And we anticipate that the price will go up as demand increases. We are currently offering the world an introductory offer of 50% off. So you can literally buy this thing with limited quantities at $25 each today. Ultimately, over the long term, the price will come down significantly. We expect to see a real explosion of demand, and that needs to be managed against our available inventory. Let's be clear about that. But over the long term, I think you will see the product go from $50 and become less and less over time. It is manufactured in the United States, in Apex, North Carolina, and we also have two additional backup factories in the United States that will give us the capacity altogether to build 500,000 of these a month.
So I spend $25 for this device, and I use it once and throw it away?
Depends on the use. If you use it in a soiled diaper garment, you throw it away. Correct.
Okay. Okay.
Dan, back up a minute. You mean one day a soiled diaper, you have to throw it away?
The device is a disposable device, and it is essential that it remains a disposable device for healthcare reasons. It is not a reusable device. And
right,
for those incontinent patients with diarrhea and whatever, if you're going to urine and use it in that fashion, it is a healthier solution to dispose of it.
But not after one day, after that particular patient uses it. Or am I missing something?
The device is soiled if the diaper is soiled.
Huh.
But other than that, the device is reusable.
So that if you can cure a sore in 80% quicker, the aggregate cost of the medical process of doing it the traditional way versus doing it your way, even though this may cost $25 a day, because you fixed the problem much sooner, it may overall be less cost.
You will save $5 to $10 for every dollar you spend on Lash-Ins. We think in some cases it will be more like, $3 to $5, but we think in some cases where people have wounds for a very long time, you're really looking at $5 to $10 of savings for every dime you spend on Lash-Ins, for every dollar you spend on Lash-Ins. It is a remarkable financial benefit to the healthcare system. We have very extensive analysis that we've done to convince ourselves of this. It's very expensive. Imagine a bed sore in a hospital requiring a patient to stay 5 days extra. In fact, there's published studies that say patients in hospitals stay 8 days longer. Imagine the cost of that to the hospital. That's a $40,000 cost. Imagine saving them every day possible while you're spending $50 for a Lash-Ins device. It's an enormous financial benefit.
You can have.
Are you Okay. On your website, are you allowed under your restrictions under the FDA to put customer testimonials?
Oh, no. Gosh, no. In fact, we encourage customers to come on the website, join our community, tag our social media sites, and tell the world how effective it's been. We would like that.
Okay. But you don't have any of that right now.
We are implementing that, and it's going to be available pretty soon if it's not up and operating as of now. We are evolving very, very rapidly from a startup with one guy to a real extended organization. So we're growing rapidly right now.
We're looking. We've been talking about working together, and I think this is a great benefit for our customers, our business people, because they've got all of our entrepreneurs have parents who are older and are dealing with the incontinence issues or diabetes or whatever.
Yep.
And I just think it's a terrific product.
We have been talking with Nigel Parker about an age-old clinical problem, and he has a radical solution. A link to his website will be on Recalculating Biz tonight. On Recalculating Biz, you can also hear every one of our other programs, and we look forward to having you visit. Thank you, Nigel, for being with us.
You know, Dan, before we go any further, I want our audience to know about your new runaway hit book on Alzheimer's disease and how it affects teenagers. Please tell us about it.
Yeah, Don, thank you. The book is called Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? It's a book written primarily for children ages 9 to 12, but really needs to be read by the entire family. And what I try to do is I try to take the subject matter of dementia and the challenges to a different level in the form of a mystery story with my two little detectives, two little girls, Hudson and Charlotte. And it really creates a breakthrough opportunity for small children and parents and families to begin to understand the problem with dementia. See, Don, the real challenge is that the children are the forgotten people. Mom and dad spend so much time working to try and take care of mom and dad, they don't take the time to explain to the children what's going on in grandma or grandpa's brain. So you can buy it at Amazon.com, or you can order it through your local bookstore or any online bookstore besides Amazon has it available. Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? Illustrations are spectacular. A story by Dan Perkins.
Your runaway bestseller, new book.
Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? By Dan Perkins.
Dan's tip of the day should resonate with every small business. Having a bright, clear, physical plan always adds profits. One recent survey revealed 71% of walkers responded that they would enter a newly refurbished establishment even if they didn't have anything to buy or were in the market for buy. So how important is it a small business for physical establishments where customers come in to buy? It's very important. Sprucing up a small business makes sense. Saving cents may cost a small business dollars if the right quality paint is not used. According to Hotel Association figures, the average time between major spruce-ups for hotels, for member hotels, dropped from 8 to 7 years in the past 12 months. Why? Because new establishments are very important. But don't think these statistics apply only to brick-and-mortar stores. The entry page for any business is that company's storefront. For those online leaders who think they are immune to the need for change to their storefronts, think again. While changing index pages initially loses visitors, new visitors are usually generated within 3 months. So today's message, in a physical plant or online, stay new. It will help profits. Also remember, our shows are all archived at recalculating.biz. If you missed some portion of this interview and want to hear more of the guests who have been on our show, go to recalculating.biz.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.